Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I miss you. What's good, Internet? It is February 10th, 2017, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, coming to you live from Lobby 1 in Vice HQ in downtown Brooklyn. Not downtown Brooklyn at all. Williamsburg is not actually downtown
Williamsburg
Brooklyn.
Williamsburg is pretty far from downtown
yeah,
Brooklyn,
downtown
actually.
Brooklyn has
like 3 miles away.
You've been to downtown Brooklyn for stuff all the time, right? It's like the
NYU
Game Center is there.
It's a good place.
NYU Game Center.
It's a good place.
They
good
have,
people.
They have a lot of stuff. There's tall buildings downtown Brooklyn. There's some good restaurants.
Yeah.
People don't go.
People don't go often enough. There's a Target there that, it's very popular.
People
popular
are building
Target.
Chairs behind us here in Lobby 1.
Yeah,
so
there's always
noise.
Something.
They're building chairs for the lobby, though, so for our studio space. So I'm not going to complain about any of that.
Yeah, we're going to get some co-chairs.
They look good. They're like leather and they're brown. They got brown leather.
They're really nice chairs.
I didn't get that chair, right? That chair looks like it's done to me.
That chair
just tell them
like
to bring the chair in
it.
Here.
If they come back, I'm going to do that. I'll do that live for you. Patrick Klepek joining us from Illinois.
I already got a nice chair. I'm good.
Tell me about your chair game. What's your chair game like?
My chair was one of the things as you get older that you don't want to spend money on things. I'm a notorious cheapskate. I refuse to spend money. But when you start looking at the hours that you spend in a chair, at some point you should spend money on a chair.
Yeah, spend money on a chair.
So I don't know what I spent because it probably gave me a heart attack when I bought it, but I spent real money on a chair at some point.
Does it have, like, lumbar support?
Oh.
Probably. I don't know. I read a website that said, buy this chair, and I bought it. Is he going to get that chair?
He's getting the chair right now for you, for us. I can't have nice chairs because my cats eat them. They just scratch them up and bite them.
Yeah, that's a problem.
This is a nice chair, everybody.
Look at that chair.
This is a good chair.
Office Ops did a beautiful job.
Thank you, Omar.
Omar is here. Omar is great.
Ops, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate
yeah.
Your appreciation is appreciated.
Oh, I'm so glad. Cool. I'm so
You're
glad.
Things.
Everything's going
chair,
so well.
With your chair?
I'm doing great. I'm doing beautiful.
Yeah. All right, no.
This is a nice chair.
Great.
You feeling good about it?
I'm feeling pretty good. The one thing I'm less feeling good about is somehow while standing up, I lost audio in my right ear. So I'm just going to do this so I can hear Danielle better.
It's fine. It's good. I'm doing a half too. So it's fine. We're doing good.
Doing great. Video games.
It's the half tuck. Of headphones. You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. It's the most stylish way to go from
now on.
It's
the Nathan Drake of headphones.
That was a good way to turn it back
to
video
games.
Did you like that? I appreciate
it. I'm right back. You're doing it live.
I appreciate you, Danielle.
Thank you.
I hear, though, that maybe you don't appreciate Neo.
Not very much.
Oh, No,
it's not that I don't appreciate it.
What was
Sorry,
that?
I'm hitting your computer.
I was trying to make a joke. It didn't really go anywhere. I was got halfway through it, and I realized I had no way to stick the landing.
Yeah, right.
This happens.
I didn't stick many landings when I played Neo, let me be honest with you.
So, yeah, well, let's back up. So you had inquired when I had first started playing, like, whether this is a game that you could kind of get into because you didn't play the Dark Souls. Or Demon's Souls games, but you played Bloodborne and beat Bloodborne, which is an accomplishment. That is not a.
Yeah.
I think Bloodborne is a little bit easier than those games.
I went
games,
for the easy ending.
Well,
don't worry.
Whatever.
No,
it's like
I didn't.
That's one boss, basically, right?
Yeah,
it's two. But, I did all the umbilical
else.
Stuff. Like I did
you
all the stuff.
Gotten,
I could have gotten to the third.
Did you go through Kanehurst Castle?
Yes. It was my favorite area of the game.
Yeah, don't sell yourself short.
And I played 60 hours of Dark Souls 3. I played a good chunk, you know. So I have a bit of Souls experience, whatever Blood Souls, Blood
Souls
Born,
I still
however
say Souls.
People say
we'll
it.
Find a new word for it. In fact, Patrick.
Yeah, Patrick will tell us
bit.
All about that. But I started it up and I knew this game would give me 10 heart attacks if I played it for too long. Because I get impatient, I get mad. I definitely like there are things in my life where I have patience and appreciation for learning a craft, learning an art, learning something, but I just get very mad at games. I think I just, I don't know what it is. It's just, I start getting mad and I start spiraling into, what else could I do with my life right now? I'm such a loser. So instead of that...
Like, in other words, like, you think, what if instead of dying at this boss, I was learning French?
Exactly. That's precisely what it's like for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or what if instead of dying at this boss, because I'm not very good with this katana, what if I just learned how to use a real katana?
Exactly.
Because, like...
Like, I have a lot of patience for, like, martial arts
training. Do you have any weapons training?
A little bit. I know how to use a bow and a nunchaku.
Oh, so but there's no nunchaku in Neo, as far as
I know.
No,
see, that's clearly why I don't like it.
Yeah, you can dual wield swords, but that's like the closest you could probably get to.
And there's like the Kasarigama with the sickle and chain, which we talked about last week or on Monday. So
it's pretty cool. Like, I appreciate this type of game. I appreciate, like, it feels very much like actual martial arts training, which is like your master, your black belt, your whatever, your sifu, whatever art you do. Is going to just kick your ass and kick your ass and kick your ass and just kick the shit out of you until you learn. And until you just learn, until you just get it. And so, like, I super appreciate that sort of paradigm, that sort of way of learning. But not
Danielle
necessarily.
Danielle just generated a weird snap
sound. I don't
know
what happened.
That was switch.
Like, she,
literally, like, I don't know what happened.
But everyone in the room, there are four people in this room, we all went like,
everyone's like, what just happened?
What just happened? And I think it was Danielle's key was so powerful.
I got so excited about martial arts, and it just popped. Anyway, I'm getting the sense that this is a very well-designed game. I'm getting the sense that there's a lot of depth to the combat, but I still died to the first guard in that very first room like six times before I figured out, oh, there's like a sword in the other room. There are actually things I can do in the other room.
Were you just trying to like open hand?
I was trying to beat him up.
Without a weapon.
With my face. Yeah, pretty much. My face and my fist.
The opening to that game is odd. It you don't get the tutorial till after you beat the first level.
I'm in the first level.
And so if you were to play Neo without having played a Souls game before, the game assumes you know a whole lot about what to do. Like, it explains basics about the combat in a tutorial that happens after you're required to do all of those things in a level in order to get to the tutorial. Like, there are a lot of things about this game that are very poorly designed and implemented and explained, but it does do a lot of interesting things that I think differentiates itself. You know, like this idea we had talked about before of, you know, does Neo do enough to be sort of its own thing? And that's kind of what I was trying to explore in the piece that you guys mentioned earlier, which was, you know, if you did a Google search for Neo over the last year and a half, like most of them involve the word Dark Souls clone. And so I tried to explore this idea of, as we talked about earlier in the week, and last week, we're like what does that mean? Like, what is the differentiator? So I wrote this piece that was basically arguing that, you know, we use the term clone because we don't have a name for the genre quite yet, but that I argue that Dark Souls actually created within the action genre its own genre, which has its own standards and practices and expectations, and that calling it a clone immediately frames the game in a negative light. Like, I think games can be, you know, not derivative enough or, you know, and too derivative. Like, there are variations on that scale. But I think that we've actually found that Neo is actually riffing on something very specific, and we just don't have sort of a name for it yet. And I think it does it pretty well. I think, like I said, it explains itself poorly, but I think it is a very good game. But it's also probably – it is both a good game for folks that have not played a game like this before, because you actually have a lot of different ways to approach how to play it. You know, you can – there are a lot of different weapons you can use. You have these different stances. There's magic that you get access to a little bit into the game. And at the same time, it does such a poor job of explaining itself that it's probably the most frustrating game to try and jump into if you haven't had much experience with one of them before.
I mean, that's just growing pains in general for a genre like this, right? Like, I think about the same thing is would have been true for JRPGs, for first-person shooters after, you know – in that period, there's like a bunch of periods of the first-person shooter if you like work through them. But there are definitely times where like after the original like Deus Ex or like after System Shock, if you had just jumped right into one of those games without having ever one of the immersive sims without having ever like learned that stuff, you could totally be like, but wait, all of the other games I play is just run around, shoot stuff. That's all I do in those other games. One of the things that made the first Deus Ex game like so good is that opening level was such a good tutorial for that. But at the same time, if you go back now and when I play that first level of Deus Ex, I'm like, okay, like I can see the seams because I'm so used to that style of game. So I could see why maybe they would decide in Neo to front load just a regular ass level for people who are like, oh, I'm a Dark Souls fan. But because like the last thing I want to do is start the game and immediately be in a tutorial that's making it seem as if the game thinks I don't already know what a light versus a heavy attack is or what stamina is. Like, I fucking get it. But it's a difficult dilemma for sure.
One thing I really do appreciate about the game, I have to say, is I like its world and I like its story, maybe more than what I played of Dark Souls 3. Like, I like the sort of weird, dark, medieval fantasy stuff that's going on in the Dark Souls games, but I kind of like this more.
Yeah.
I like the weird blending of sort of, what is it, like 1580s England and, you know, sort of like some samurai stuff and some Chinese lore and all sorts of stuff is going on in it. Like, I think that's cool. I actually like that the story is a little bit more explicit as far as I can tell. Mm-hmm. Like, there are people who talk and the things they say make a little more sense. No,
it is definitely, it's a much more traditional like form of storytelling, which is, which is one thing it does that Dark Souls never has done and probably never will in the games that From Software produces. Like, they just have a different brand of storytelling, and Neo is very much wanting to tell like sort of a more traditional story. Like, you're not reading item descriptions in Neo, which is fine.
That's
fine
with me too.
Which is fine with me. It's a different approach.
But I have to like gird myself and say that's fine with me. It is. It's totally fine and good. And the same thing is true with the fact that I think that, from what I understand, Neo has much more accessible multiplayer. Like, it's way easier for me to just be like, hey, Patrick, let's play some Neo. Hey, Danielle, let's play some Neo together.
Sort of. I guess the beta had really accessible multiplayer, and then the developers said, made the game too easy.
See,
and then they like really clamped. Like, for example, like you can't just co-op the game with someone from start to finish. The only way to do co-op is for someone that has already beaten an area to come back and help someone in that area. You know, whereas in the Souls games, you can from the very beginning, you could jump in with someone and essentially co-op your way through in a private room, especially with Bloodborne and Dark Souls 3 with the tweaks they made. In Neo, they don't want to disallow you from having that sort of collaborative co-op experience, but it is fundamentally different. Like, they seem to be emphasizing the solo, isolated nature, and that if you want to do that co-op stuff, you can, but they're kind of pushing against it a little bit, I think.
There's a fundamental difference between two people opening a door for the first time together, one person opening a door for the first time, and then one person opening the door for someone who hasn't seen what's behind it.
Yeah.
Like, the idea of, like, we're both going forward into the void holding hands is, like, a different sort of experience, and I can't judge. What I was going to say was that I find myself not balking, but like tensing up at the notion of making the Dark Souls stuff, of sanding the rough edges off of Dark Souls and making it more accessible and not asking you to read item descriptions. Not because it's wrong, like not because I think that's bad game design, but because those things appeal to me about that series, and I can feel there's a risk 5 years, 6 years down the line of me being that asshole who was like, I miss the good old days when you had to read the item descriptions. And when NPCs, instead of just telling you what they meant, they would just go like, oh, you are the chosen one, aren't you?
I should clarify.
Which is how every Dark Souls NPC sounds.
It's
true. I don't want to be I want to be the person who like enjoys that and also allows there to be this other world where games are just like more straightforward and approachable.
See, because because like when I was thinking through like what does it mean to be like a, let's just use the term Souls-like, because I feel like that's like the most, that's, we don't have
someone,
the vernacular.
Someone in the chat said you could go the Monhun, the Monster Hunter route, and call them like Daso games.
Daso
games.
What does that mean?
Like Dark Souls, like Monhun?
Oh, gross. No. Stop that.
Souls-like is good. It's like roguelike. Souls-like.
Yeah, that's why I thought Souls-like was appropriate. Yeah. Like, so like what you're talking about with the item descriptions and the way the NPCs act, I feel that's part of what makes Dark Souls, like, if we step back, this is going to look complicated.
It's not part of the Berlin definition of Souls-like.
If we think of it as a genre, right? Like, the way the NPCs act, the item descriptions, that is specific to Dark Souls, not the genre. Like, if you get what I'm following, like, Neo saying, like, we're going to do the storytelling different. We're not going to do the item descriptions. Like, that, it still is in the Souls-like, but I feel like if Neo was to do item descriptions, that would start to feel grossly ripping on what Dark, you know what I mean?
I
like,
do.
Like,
There's,
so I feel like there's something separate there where, like, if something like Neo was taking that, that's a step too far. But, like, the right. other sort of less defined, but, like, somewhere it's – I guess it's in the combat, like, as we're figuring out what those that rule set is. Yeah. So I feel like I'm okay with that, partially because if they did it, I feel like that would feel like an imitation too far.
Are you familiar with the Berlin definition of roguelikes?
Yes.
No.
You are.
It's good. Like pages long,
it's
isn't
pages
it?
Long.
Can we explain for yes. for me?
So,
We'll pretend I'm being a devil's advocate, but I actually don't know.
All right. Okay.
You're not supposed to say that when you're...
No, that's...
But it's fine.
Give it away. Mm-hmm. The thing that... here, the Berlin definition is a definition that was arrived at in 2008 at the Roguelike Development Conference in Berlin, which is... This is, like, so entirely my shit at an aesthetics level. The notion
Wait,
that
you're not lying.
No.
He's
this
really
is
not.
Super for real.
This is for real.
I still don't know if you're lying, but
I'm
100% going
to
give you the...
So I'm going to get to a part... I'm going to get to something that I think is actually useful and productive for us in determining Good. What the Souls like is.
Okay.
So I'm reading here from Roguebasin.com, which is a really great, like, wiki site for roguelikes. I went through, like, a real serious roguelike phase around this era. So roguelike refers to a genre, not merely like rogue. The genre is represented by its canon. The canon for roguelikes is ADOM, Angband, Crawl, NetHack, and Rogue. Those are what the core canonical roguelikes are. And then from those, they found factors, high value and low value factors, that determine what is and is not a roguelike. I don't necessarily agree with this definition, but I like the methodology here. So, for instance, high value factors. So I'll keep reading. The list can be used to determine how roguelike a game is. Missing some points does not mean the game is not a roguelike. Likewise, possessing some points does not mean the game is a roguelike. The purpose of the definition is for the roguelike community to better understand what the community is studying. It is not to place constraints on developers or games, which is all, like, yes, good. So high value factors: random environment generation, permadeath, turn-based, grid-based, non-modal. Non-modal means that everything happens in the same mode. There isn't, like, so, like, movement and attacking should all be always available, like, at all times. Like, there isn't – shops should exist inside of that space. Like, Spelunky is non-modal. Buying a gun from a shopkeeper is not done on a list. It's done in the game world.
Yes.
With the same verbs that you would to pick up anything else.
Sure,
Complexity, it's complex. Resource management – hack and slash, which is to say killing things, is how you move forward. Exploration and discovery. And then low value factors are single player character. Monsters are similar to players in that the world affects them similarly. Tactical challenge, an ASCII display, dungeons, and numbers.
Numbers.
And it's just like...
numbers.
The thing that I like about that is, like, okay... It's not like, oh, does this fit this exact checklist? It's, let's throw a bunch of stuff on the wall. Here's what makes a game like Dark Souls. Does this other game, how does this game draw from it? Does it fit into, does it hit enough of those checkboxes to add up to that thing? I'm not.
Yeah, because right now it's just sort of like a gut feeling. And when you look at something like Neo and you're like, okay, well, it's got a shrine checkpoint system that's like the bonfires. But, like, is that one of these pillars we're talking about, like you just laid out, or is that just a byproduct of something deeper that we haven't quite identified that makes a Souls game a Souls game?
Totally, right. And so that's one of those things that, like, a year from now we might play a different game that does do a lot with item descriptions and with weird, like, surreal NPCs, or that has, like, unlike Neo, that has the Dark Souls 1 style interconnected world, but maybe doesn't have you lose your health or you lose your XP when you die twice in a row. And we would then be saying, okay, well, we can see the Dark Souls influence here. Does this count? And it's a stupid thing to kind of, like, get caught up there on the what is in and what is out. There isn't something – there isn't a ton valuable in that outside of just it's a fun exercise for your mind to
– It also clarifies how you feel about certain things, and it clarifies how you think of certain things and how you put things into frameworks. Like, it's useful to do that sometimes.
When you're teaching game design, Daniel, do you find that you do use definitions like this for new developers?
We definitely do, like, a full breakdown of, like, mechanics, dynamics, aesthetics, and sort of everything that flows from those definitions. And then we also do a lot of this. We do a lot of this sort of pedantic stuff that doesn't sound like much fun, but it's actually useful to sort of get your brain thinking in those terms and get your brain actually sort of used to working in those frameworks.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Do you find students push back against that stuff at a certain point if they are more knowledgeable about games to begin with? Or are they just like...
Not really. I'll say a controversial thing. I think a lot of people who play games like to think in these terms often. Not everybody, certainly. I'm not really super oriented towards this way of thinking. I like things that are fuzzy. I like things that blend a lot of stuff. I like I like spectrums as opposed to grids, personally, just generally in my life. But typically they don't push back much. They're like, okay, cool, I'm going to digest this, then I'm going to make whatever I'm going to make.
Right.
From
if it falls
this,
into this, it falls.
Then
right.
It's cool. Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think the Brooklyn definition of a Souls like is?
Well, so that, yeah, I mean, that's what I'm curious about.
Let's do
we
it.
We should have a chalkboard.
I wish
here.
I had a chalkboard.
Just writing it out. Here. You know, good. Well, we could just write on the glass.
On the glass itself.
You know, make it our room. Nobody will want to come in here. They're like, nerd writing is everywhere. No.
So like, you can speak generally, and then we would have to break it down into what that means, right? So, like, you die a lot. Like, is constant fear of death? Or, I feel like. Because I don't want to say dying a lot, because that's not necessarily...
Right, death is always a real
threat.
You die a lot
in 20... Or in like the Cat Mario and a lot of other games like that.
Yeah, but this is a sort of like a constant fear of death, like that sort of permeates the entire experience, right? Yes. It's why you're cautious when you're walking around. It's why you have to be careful to not spam your attacks. Mm-hmm. Like, generally speaking, like, Souls-like games have like a permeated sense of death like around the corner.
Yeah.
Like,
I have to say, Rick Advice in chat said, third-person view, vague lore, and suffering.
Those are also the tenets of my religion.
Yes, so. Exactly.
Life is third-person, vague, and suffering.
Yep.
I wonder...
Brooklyn Buddhism.
I would say right now it is, but I would say that's not that could be amended out.
Yeah, because like I think that's a low factor.
I think it's coincidental, but not necessarily foundational.
Because like think about
Titan Souls. Think about Hyper Light Drifter.
Zombie U. Yes, which is first person. Yeah, there are definitely some top down, like, which
you
is
know,
still
2D as opposed
right.
to 3D.
I'm really holding out for the second person Dark Souls game, where it's like you did this. It's all in second. It's me looking at you playing the
me
game.
Me doing the thing.
Yeah, that's actually
watching it on Twitch.
Got there first. God damn it, Danielle got there. Swish.
I saw it in your eyes.
So good. All right. So I like vague lore. I think that might also be a low factor for me. But maybe that's unfair. Like, am I just raising up the high factor, like, gameplay stuff because it's gameplay?
Oh,
no, but, like,
I see, in my
heart of hearts, vague lore should be at the top because, like, that's so much of it for me.
I figured, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's, like, a huge – especially for, like, Dark Souls 2 specifically, okay. Like – part of what you're attracted to that game is the lore.
It is, but maybe the thing here actually is like the importance of reading, like the importance of evaluating items inside of the world or something like that, right? Because I think something like or maybe more broadly narratively is like I want to use like the word hypertext here, but that's not really right. I kind of like. The narrative is spread through items and places.
Yeah.
Environmental and item-driven storytelling could be something that's a low factor here.
I think so.
Like you could make the and you could also make the argument that Neo purposely flips that on its head. Whereas with the Dark Souls games, every item is important for its narrative function, if not necessarily lined up with its actual literal function for how you're going to use it in the game. In Neo. Like, nothing is sacred. All items are loot. Right. You are just constantly grinding through things. Like, in some ways, it's saying, like, oh, you're so precious about everything you have in Dark Souls because of X, Y, and Z. And Neo says, fuck that. Like, you're just going to get a ton of stuff, and you're going to get rid of it. Like, you're going to sell it. You're going to scrap it. Like, and so in some ways, it's you could see it, like, looking at what Dark Souls does with items and saying, we're going in the complete opposite direction, which is that you are not precious about anything in Neo, which is, like, allows the sacredness of items in Souls to exist as a possibly a low factor in what defines a Souls like, but also allows Neo to comment on it by doing something like maybe I'm reading too much into it, but that's like how I feel like that's a way of interpreting how it takes one part of it and does its own thing.
Here's one. This is a good one from Racketeer in the chat. Racketeer in the chat. Resource limitation. Estus, stamina bar, equip
yes.
load, poise.
That is 100% core.
Yes. Resource management, resource limitation.
Yeah, that is like foundational yes. probably. In which you can like you can put the pain points in different places, right? Mm-hmm. So like stamina is quite, you know, deployed differently in Neo, Souls, Bloodborne, but the idea of like resource management is key to that, depending on how it's actually implemented.
Totally.
So I think that is like that's probably the closest we've gotten to on a gameplay level.
Yeah.
Of like at the like the identifiable core of what is actually happening in the like the design.
You can zero in on that even further to be like, you know, one of your resources is even just the ability to swing your sword, right?
Yeah.
To not be mid attack animation. Everything about those games you could make that argument comes down to the management of resources.
Yep.
Which is good. Another good one from the chat. This is a great chat today. Great chat right
yeah.
now. Bon Sequitur says
I thought you were trying to make a bonfire joke.
Well, I wasn't. But here's I'll tell you why I got confused here. I think the essence of Soul games is just gradually pushing from one
the
safe
Estus.
Place to another through danger. And that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Moving from something – that's something that is not in roguelikes really at all, or not as a canonical thing, but is in Souls and Souls-inspired games, is moving from one – whatever that safe place is, whether it's a bonfire or a sword in the ground
or
a shrine or something, successfully moving past that – through that space and then getting to another one. I think that
yeah.
that's
– And that speaks to like another – game design teacher kind of thing, which mm-hmm. is player experience goals,
mm.
which is like, how do you want your player to feel while they're playing the game? You know, what like combination of emotions do you ideally want every player to feel? And it feels like that's getting towards it, like feelings of safety versus feelings of anxiety
right.
and fear of death, like you were talking about, Patrick, and kind of all this stuff that you're feeling as you're sort of in the midst, like in the moment
yeah.
to moment.
Also, Bon Sequitur is Bruno Diaz, who wrote for me
Bruno.
last year at Giant Bomb about Dark Souls.
And has stuff coming for us
has
soon.
Stuff coming for us
in
soon
fact.
Here at Waypoint. Shout outs to Bruno Diaz.
Yeah.
Good one.
I would say sort of maybe like commitment.
Yeah. Yes.
Because I feel like I'm like fumbling my way through this, but like I don't know if necessarily animation priority. Maybe that's core. I mean, it is part... a core tenet of a lot of the Souls-like games in which, like, when you attack,
right.
you can't, unlike an action game like say, a Devil May Cry, you can't immediately switch to something else. Like, when you commit to something, you
yeah.
commit to it. And
but
I feel like
deliberate
that's...
deliberate action. Very, like...
Yeah, so I feel like commitment or deliberate action is, like, more core to a lot of what you end up doing, like, stat upgrades and rolls and attacking. Like, there's a sense of, like, when you do something, you go for it in a... Like, it's a risk-reward sort of thing. In a Souls-like game that is more so in other games that give you options.
Rick in the chat says, this all seems to fall under the suffering umbrella.
Correct.
By the way, the suffering umbrella is my new novel.
That's
it's coming out in the fall.
Can't wait.
Part one of three.
Part one of three of the suffering trilogy. It's the suffering umbrella.
What's on the book cover?
The first
really
one is just the back of a man holding an umbrella behind him. The second one is the
suffering... It's raining blood,
right,
too.
It's raining blood.
Just so you know.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Oh, yeah.
The second one is the Suffering Pagoda, and it's a couple dancing in the – it's the guy with the umbrella with a woman, and they're dancing inside of a pagoda. And the third one is the Suffering Ring, and it's just that it's her hand with a ring on it, and the ring is made of blood
it's
also.
It's made of blood.
And if you read the description, you actually learn that actually – you get all of her backstory if you read the item description
of
the
course.
Ring.
Of course you do. That's what the fourth novel – the supplementary novel
right.
is just what's written
well,
on the ring
right.
in tiny, tiny
script. The first three novels all have a bunch of footnotes, but they don't go to anything.
Right.
And there's
right.
like all these indexed words, and you just do. If you go to the, you get the fourth novel, you can go there. And it's just a dictionary.
There it is
of all of the terms. It's an encyclopedia. I really want to read this book.
I really Can you please write this? God, that would be great.
If only.
I'd be down.
Anyway, Souls, the Brooklyn Souls-like
Brooklyn
definition.
The
Brooklyn theory of Souls-likes.
Souls-likes. I actually think we really
there's
do have a good working definition.
What I have right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's I could probably talk about this for another.
It's embarrassing how much I would like to keep talking about this.
This is probably the closest that Austin and I have got to we've threatened to just let's start a podcast and talk about Souls for as long as we want.
We've thought about it.
The closest we've gotten to this.
It's a cool podcast.
It's a really good podcast.
They're really good. Yeah.
I'm gonna say we should. We should try and revisit this.
Yes.
This should be people should write in, send in questions or rather comments how you feel about the sort of intrinsic nature of a Souls-like game, and we should try and help the world
over the course of the next year. Yeah.
Yeah, we should literally do this. This is something we could write about and we could revisit.
Yeah.
And we could write multiple articles explaining here's what we think. Are these games what defines these games? And maybe as a collective, we can contribute to trying to come up with a better definition of what these games are.
And again, to go back to what we were saying before, like the Berlin definition, we aren't trying to say that games that don't fit this shouldn't be valuable or
right.
I'm going to just read again. The purpose of our definition for us, the Souls-like community, is to better understand what the community is studying. It is not to place constraints on developers or games.
Yes.
Shout outs to the Berlin interpretation. I should note that there's a really good counter argument to the Berlin definition of roguelikes called Screw the Berlin Interpretation, which is just it opens with, in the year 2008, several men and women came together in Berlin to create the last best definition of a roguelike. It failed. And yep, good.
I mean,
come out.
Yeah, because when you say you came up with the definition, you buy definitions sound like a bunch of assholes.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
You got it. We know. You don't have to write when you write in the questions when you write in the gaming.
We accept this.
We know. GamingAdvice.com. Use the subject Brooklyn definition question or something. Brooklyn definition should be fine.
There you go.
The Brooklyn assholes.
The Brooklyn assholes. That's us. Oh,
good.
Boy. So besides Neo, besides our complete descent into Souls madness.
I beat Punch Club. Oh,
you beat Punch Club.
It was so good. I love it. It has some bugs, though.
How was Punch
Club? There's some damn bugs in that game.
Oh, were there?
But I pushed through. I powered through.
What's an example of a bug in Punch Club?
There are some early enemies who regenerate health at a weird and crazy degree. I don't think this is a bug everybody encounters.
That's
but
a tough one.
It
in
was
the game
a really bad
fighting.
One. It was a really bad
boxing.
One. There's a little too much RNG, I think, in some of the fights. And there's some weird difficulty spikes at different points of the game. There were times where I spent hours and hours and hours at some early level fights, and then later on in parts that were supposed to be more difficult, I just breezed
right through. Do you think that was just your build was really good? Also, can you explain for people listening what fighting is like? We've talked about we've kind of talked about the metagame of Punch Club before a lot of oh, I'm selling pizza, oh, I'm training, I'm going to a fight.
Yeah.
But what's the moment to moment, I'm in the ring.
The combat itself.
Fisticuffs.
In combat
pugilism.
Itself. Pugilism. You do this.
Yeah,
you
the
do
King's
a lot of
sport.
This.
That's
you
not what it's
you
called.
Do the King's Sport, the Marquis of Queensberry.
The Queensberry Sport.
The Queens. Yeah. Queensberries of sport. What you do is you have a build. And you can focus on strength, stamina, or agility. I did agility, and it's bear, tiger, and turtle. It's all kind of a martial arts, sort of thing. And I focused on agility, which is the tiger path. And basically, you pick there's a general skill tree sort of at the beginning of the game where you pick attributes like, I'm going to train this much more efficiently when I do particular moves, or I am going to get this much agility back from doing X, Y, or Z. And then you basically, when you go into fights, you can pick up to five of your moves. I think you actually start with three, but it could be this is a high kick, this is a punch, this is a block, and you pick the things that suit your attributes, basically. Then you just go into the fight, and it's completely dice rolls from that point. Your numbers, your stats against the other fighter's stats and numbers. So you sit there, and you're literally cheering as if you're a coach who basically put in the time to say, okay, you're going to train this today. You're going to focus on this or that. And here are the moves I want you to focus on versus this other fighter. So it's I got really into it, at least, the immersion of being the coach of this little fighter, of your little guy in there.
Nice.
And I think it's strategic. I think it's really good. And I think it gets the the actual feeling of doing martial arts, and you know, particularly boxing, but it's there's a lot of kicking. There's yeah. other stuff in this game.
It's not MMA. It's not kickboxing. It's
right.
It's fighting.
They call it.
It's fight sports.
Punch club yeah. for a reason. Like it's very like it riffs on a lot of martial arts stuff. It riffs on a lot of martial arts movies. Like there's a lot of Rocky parody. Sure. There's actually some Ninja Turtles parody stuff in there,
right?
Which is cute and fun. I think it fits the sort of very bright and 80s. Aesthetic of it.
Is it actually in the 80s?
I don't know if it's actually in the 80s, but it feels like it is. You know, there's so many Rocky little references to it. There's a Stoney poster in your garage while you're training, while you're hitting the speed bag.
I get
it. It's cute. The thing I wanted to say about it, and I will stop talking about this game because I finally beat it, is that the thing I think it hits the most.
Hits the most?
Oh, I didn't even mean that one. See, when that happens, I'm always like, aha, I should take credit. The thing that I think it like digs under my skin the most is the like anxiety of martial arts, which is you're going to lose ground over time. Like you're always constantly fighting a battle in this game. And if you do martial arts with losing any of your skills, if you get hurt, mm-hmm. you have to take time off. You start feeling like, oh no, I'm going to start getting rusty. I'm going to start sliding. And stat decay is such a tremendous part of this game. Like you, especially right. once you get into like double digits with any of your stats, it starts becoming so difficult.
Just remembered that from when I played
progress.
It. Because you're just yeah. constant. That's so before when we talked about this game, I'd mentioned that one of the things that didn't stress me out, but kind of. So what ended up happening for me leaving the game was I had my save on a PC or on a laptop, and I couldn't bring it to my home PC at the time.
That sucks.
Like when it first came out.
Yeah.
So that may have been changed by now. It was obviously before the 3DS version. And I'd made a bunch of progress, and I didn't want to start over specifically because I remembered that there was this notion of like the timing needing to be really carefully managed
yes.
in terms of like scheduling your fights and your training and stuff. And I couldn't remember why, and that's what it was. It was the fact that your stats
heavy
just degrade over time.
Yeah.
Regardless, like just because you're not working them.
Every single day you lose a tremendous chunk of progress, no matter in
yeah,
every
fucking,
single stat.
Welcome
and
to 2017.
It sucks and it's hard. And you know? Like that's realistic.
Every single fucking day.
I know, right? But it's the most realistic part of the game for martial arts and life.
Right. Sidebar 2017 talk. Steve Bannon, $60 million.
60 mil.
Wow, gold farming. Goldman Sachs. Those are some keywords you could type into your search engine of choice today. Did anybody read this story?
Yes.
I know we don't have much time left, but did anybody break it down for our listeners in a...
It's what it sounds like.
He invested a lot of Goldman Sachs money into a WoW gold farming scheme.
Yep.
And lost it.
He lost all of it, I think. It's a perfect encapsulation of him and his ideals in life, I feel like.
Man.
It's a little too perfect. On the nose. If I were reading this in a novel, if I was watching this in a movie, I'd be like, that's on the nose. Like, that's
You should put this in the second book of the Suffering Trilogy.
Oh, that's
something
right.
Like
it'll be
this.
In there. That'll be like the backdrop to that entire exchange.
Yes.
The Suffering Pagoda. That's the Pagoda Industries is the name of the gold farming.
End this podcast as soon as possible.
It's the name of the gold farming.
Oh, Pagoda group. Industries.
I'm going to go to the question bucket.
Yeah, please.
Give me
whatever gets us to the end.
Give me a number. Oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do number 60 for $60
million.
Dollars.
Great.
Thanks. Thanks, Steve. Mm-hmm. Go to number 60 here. Let's take a look. Scrolling down. I'm scrolling down. Past Oscar, past Russell.
So
past Joey.
Hackadon in chat said, I guess the Electoral College does protect farmers.
Jesus Christ. This comes in from Trey. After the recent political cycle, after any sort of tragedy, there seems to be an uptick around noise around events that are unsubstantiated or fabrications. While a site might apologize after they report on this stuff that they may have gotten something wrong or they might delete a tweet or run a correction to a story, the misinformation is already out there and the damage is already done. It's not just the smaller voices that do this, but often media conglomerates who hire journalists to engage in this sort of activity. This is very broad, and I obviously don't want to... You know, this is a very broad claim. I'm
gotcha.
Not saying that there's nothing there, but
gotcha.
This brings me to three questions. What are effective ways that we as readers can sift through the BS to find credible information? Two, from a journalistic perspective, what can be done to change this sort of behavior on a larger scale? And three, from a reader's perspective, what should we be doing to change this sort of behavior in media outlets? Thank you for your time, Trey.
Don't get your news from Facebook memes, I think, is the number one.
Certainly step one.
The number one thing you can do. And, like, completely seriously, like, tell friends and family, like, hey, some of this stuff is fake.
Right.
That's a conversation that's worth having with, like, relatives who aren't super media, you know, reading stuff every day from
different sources.
I should note
that this came in before the phrase fake news was in the kind of common lexicon and well before it had been kind of re-co-opted by the current presidential administration.
I was going to say, like, before the term existed and before the term was promptly destroyed.
Yep, exactly.
Correct.
So yeah, I do want to say that it isn't just Facebook memes. Like, that is definitely a big part of it. But yeah, there is definitely a rush to report on shootings and to report on, you know, anytime that there is a plane crash or a train crash or, you know, anytime there's any sort of major horrific tragedy.
Yeah.
It pays to be the first out there to say something. And for me, the best thing to do is to find outlets that don't do that and, like, stick to them and stick to those reporters who catch themselves from doing that. I think a lot of places do well by this stuff.
Yes.
There are a lot of places who do their best to vet everything, check for sources.
I like the New Yorker for that personally.
Yeah. Patrick, what about you? As someone who reads a lot of news.
You know, it's in this current media environment, like, especially, you know, if you want to put in the context of, you know, I think it's been common where something, quote unquote, leaks out of the Trump administration.
Yes.
And then an hour later, it's been amended or corrected or changed. Just give things time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when something, I think On the Media, which is one of my favorite podcasts, they do a lot of great sort of media reporting, and they have this series of things that you can, if you just search for it, it's like these emergency handbook guides, which are essentially guides as a media consumer, as someone that wants to know information, like how you should feel about various parts of information. Like, they break down what happens when a mass shooting occurs, like what things that outlets always get wrong because they want to report, they want to get, you know, they're trying to do right by their readers or viewers and getting information out there, but that if you look at the aggregate data, almost always it's going to be changed by the time the actual story is discovered. So, you know, if you're looking for ways to kind of educate yourself to, like, better identify those markers, like, go look up the On the Media, like, emergency handbooks. They have them for mass shootings, for natural disasters, for a whole bunch of different things that, you know, once you look at it once, you'll know the signifiers, and you won't, you know, it's not like you're going to have to have it up, you know, on your, in a tab, but it's nice. It's like, it's useful to have someone else go through and let you know, these are the things that you're going to see as soon as something big breaks, and you should immediately ignore it.
Yep.
because it's going to change, and, you know, avoid participating in the retweet culture and things like that by knowing what information to avoid. So that would be sort of my sort of useful tip on how to better educate yourself, so you can, like, we all sort of contribute to that.
Totally.
You know, like,
how about this?
You know,
when do you personally know when you're like, all right, now I'm satisfied and ready to retweet this thing? Like, now I believe these sources, enough information has come out. Is there, like, can you identify something in that moment when you decide it's okay to go ahead and forward that information?
It's less to do with, like, a moment as much as I think I've done what you do is, like, there are certain people that I just trust.
Right.
Like, there are certain folks that I follow on Twitter because they are going to lean hard into my partisan feelings and are going to retweet and share a bunch of bullshit that I know up front probably isn't true, but is going to make me feel great in the moment.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then there are folks that I follow that I know have, like, a hard-coded set of rules that are only going to share information, or if they're going to share information, they're going to share skepticism alongside that.
Yes.
And so those are the people I look to when I'm actually want to participate or share something, is, like, I am putting my trust in them because they have proven to be trustworthy in the past. That doesn't mean I don't follow people that I know don't do that, because I get something different out of them. But, like, I watch myself and how I interact with those people and how they sort of perform over time.
It's been so weird to see the rise of the, like, the alt the alternative, like, fact, not the alternative, see, fucking, I can't use language anymore. Everything
fake,
is
fake news. Taken.
But the sort of, like, the supposed rogue National Forest Service people, the supposed, like, insider accounts from people who are supposed to be
rogue
inside.
White House.
Rogue White House, exactly. Where,
like, come on. There's some, that makes you feel good.
It makes you feel good, come on.
But you know.
Like, to the point where, like, those are accounts that won't be vetted by third-party, individual, left-leaning journalists, right? Like, these are people who, like, could call up someone and verify who they were to an independent source who could then go out and say, yes, I verified that you are this person, or that person's knowledge is true. And that would help me believe a lot of that stuff a little bit more. But, like, that's just not the purpose it's going to serve in my life unless that happens. You know, like, I'm not saying that those people should go public. There's a complete – complete value to having someone, an anonymous insider in these places who are reporting what's happening. It's just tough to be like – okay, like, I'm just not going to ever retweet that stuff because I can't trust it, which is tough, especially given, again, how far to the left I am. Would love to have all that stuff be true. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's all it takes is, like, one of those things to end up being, like, a shitty alt-right troll account. Like, there's straight up, if you're in New York, heads up, there is straight up a fake Antifa New York Twitter account that just takes real Antifa Twitter account photos and recirculates them with, like, basically Steve Buscemi meme, what's up, kids? Like, I'm in high school style. Like, we did a good job fighting against the system today, last night in the Bronx. And it's just like, oh,
it's so gross.
So bad.
Yeah, it's so gross.
Yeah, just do your research. And here's a tiny one. Read the responses to anything you're going to retweet before you retweet it. Or really, before you respond to it also helps. That way you're not just repeating information that person already has.
Yeah.
But like, really, because, like, one of the things that I'll do as soon as I see a story that's like, oh, this seems like something that my followers would be interested in, but also seems like it has the potential for being maybe like not necessarily a lie, but not having all the facts yet, being underinformed, being underrepresentative of some sort of fact, is I'll read through the responses and see, because someone inevitably will be like, no, that's wrong. Even if it's right, someone will say it's wrong, and then we'll link to something.
You need to know who the person who says it's wrong, what's their,
and what are they linking
what are
to
they
to
doing?
Prove that it's
exactly.
wrong? Because at a certain point, they're probably linking to some bullshit that I can also disregard. Or they're
like,
linking to a really good story that helps present some extra context that like makes the original headline less sweet.
And sort of speaking from a reporter's perspective, like, I'm very careful about the stories I break and the stories that I share, because I want to be one of those people that when I say something that sounds unexpected or I'm reporting something that is surprising, that you'll believe me.
Yep. Yeah.
As opposed to, like, we saw a lot of this happen in the run-up to the Nintendo Switch, where there became essentially like a Nintendo Switch rumor culture that emerged, in which there were a mixture of reporters, trolls,
right?
People that maybe were getting some information that was real and some information that was bullshit, and it became really difficult to tell the difference in that stuff. And that, like, some of that are people that are sharing information, but maybe not sharing. You know, just because you get information doesn't mean you should share it.
Yep.
And I find, like, I would like, there's a lot more that I know that I wish I could share, but if I'm wrong two or three times, that erodes my credibility, and I'd rather keep that so that when I do say, like, hey, there's going to be a PlayStation 4 Pro, people aren't like, no, there's not.
You're,
like,
always,
like,
wrong.
His hit rate is pretty high. There is probably something to this fire.
Well, that's the thing that we have to evaluate all the time with this stuff. And obviously we're talking about a much lower risk or kind of lower importance thing than national security.
National
is important
security
to me.
Is,
you know what I mean? Like, as, like, yeah, like, it's important to us and the thing we love, even if it is not necessarily going to impact, you know,
but
the economic
favors of people. But we still bring care to it, is kind of where I was going with that. Where, like, it would have been super easy for both of us to immediately go out last year and be like, oh yeah, PS4 Pro, here's what's in it, blah, 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 blah. And, like, based on, like, a document we may have had or whatever. And it was important to not just have that document, but then to, like, test that document by talking to other people who might not even have the document yet. Like, so when I got the PS4 Pro, like, schema document, I had to talk to developers and some other sources who I knew would know if it was in that document was true, which is like a completely different thing than just like, oh yeah, someone gave me a PDF. Here's
right.
that PDF.
Right.
And that can be tough because it's so tempting to just be like – it's so tempting to like have the spotlight for a hot second because you dropped some stuff.
Fucking fun. Like,
it feels fun
like,
as hell when you
like
drop
the biggest
a bomb.
Stories over my career, like the Infinity War, the right. Xbox DRM, and the PlayStation 4 Pro stuff, like it is cool as hell to know the entire internet or the internet that we're sort of talking about is discussing a thing that
yep.
you said. Like, that is cool as hell. And so that's why you actually, you know, that's why I have such deep respect for reporters who are so diligent and careful about
right.
that, because, like, the feeling you get when that happens is, I mean, it's unlike really anything else. And so the temptation to go back to that bucket is really
yep.
tempting because it's a cool feeling.
Then yeah. the thing, so for me, like, that's true not only for reported work, but also for critical work. Like, whenever
yes.
I have in my past written a thing that, like, blows up, like, that feeling of, like, wow, like, I said a thing that holds up to scrutiny is really great. But also, the lesson I learned very quickly was not to chase that feeling separate from not to chase the feeling of attention separate from the feeling of engagement. Like, I wanted
right.
people to actually read the stuff I was saying and like dig into it, and not just Austin said a game was racist or Austin
right.
said a game
right.
was bad. And it can be tough to make sure you're focused on the right part, because it's way harder to say something like critical and complex than it is to like do a hot take.
Yep.
So
yep. you have to, if you're going to go after glory, you have to have the guts behind it. To put it in Punch Club terms.
Thank you, Danielle.
You know?
I gotcha.
You know,
guts and glory.
Right there.
No guts, no glory.
That's right. That's how it works.
That's also a Mech Warrior thing, so I'll
Is
take
it. Oh, good. See, it works for all
it
of us.
It works for all of us. We just need something for Patrick, and then we'll be good.
We just need a good phrase for Patrick.
Some sort of, you can earn glory points in Neo, so that works.
See,
all right, well, there
beautiful.
You go. By
all
getting,
of us.
Right, by gutting other people. If you gut
yes.
people, you get glory.
That's
Got it.
That's right.
This has been Waypoint Radio, episode 38.
Yes,
I
you're
think,
right.
Something
it
like
is
that.
38.
If
it is
you 38. Want your question to be in the question bucket next week, what you should do is write into gamingadvice.com. Use the subject question. That's where you can send the questions for us. And we'll check that out next week. Patrick, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me and my son in Fire Emblem Heroes.
Donald.
Saving the world. Donald.
You can read about
He's very weak. He's a very weak boy. He's
oh.
a very weak boy.
He'll be strong soon.
He'll get there.
He's strong
he'll
in his heart, Patrick.
His heart is
he
strong.
Is, yeah.
His heart strong.
He knows how strong he was in Fire Emblem Awakening, and he can get that strong again.
I really hope that's true for Heroes. I'm sure someone has already leveled him up to level 5 to see what those
stat
gains are like, but I really hope that it's the same thing, because in I don't know if you played Awakening or not, Danielle.
It's just a touch.
But Donald comes in like way underpowered, but he has like a stat growth, kind of a progression.
In order to get Donald to the point where he is a walking, talking murder machine, you have to spend like hours of the game like corralling him around other units, because if he gets hit, he's going to die, and you have to use your other units to get them down to like 2 HP so that him and his dinky little stick can whack him. But it's worth it.
Patrick, you're gonna have to fucking hold me back, because that person on Twitter who was like, only casuals love Donald,
fuck you!
Fuck off!
Mm-mm.
Like, that is the
casual, loving, hardworking fathers
that's
love
right.
Donald.
That's right.
It's the most, like, dismissive. That's like saying, like, only casuals love the eggplant run in Spelunky. That's like saying, like, only casuals love, like, Bernie Kosar, the fucking Cleveland Browns quarterback from the late 90s. Like,
there you go.
Deep cut.
You don't...
He's Magikarp. That's what Phobin is saying.
He's Magikarp.
Basically like Magikarp.
Right. Only casuals like Magikarp. Fuck off.
No, they don't.
Danielle, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me defending Magikarp at DanielleRI on Twitter.
Find me at Austin_Walker, where I'm fucking taking on all haters. Come get it. On Twitter.
Come join our casual group. Waypoint loves casuals.
That's right.
I wanted to make sure
casual
I got Bernie Kosar's name right, which I did. But so I went to the internet to Google to type in Bernie Kosar, and instead I typed in Austin_Walker because I was thinking it. Find me at @Austin_Walker on Twitter. You can find Waypoint on Twitter at twitter.com/Waypoint, on Facebook at Waypoint Vice, at youtube.com/Waypoint Vice. You can find a video there of Patrick playing Neo. You can find a video there of me and Joel playing Ghost Recon Wildlands. Sometime in the next few days, you'll see a video of me playing a bunch of other stuff, because last night I did a stream right here on twitch.tv/Waypoint of the following games. Phantom Dust.
Good.
Good game.
Crackdown.
Excellent.
Good game.
Outrun Live Arcade, which is no longer available and is so good. You can find an archive of that on twitch.tv/waypoint. I'll get those up on our YouTube sometime in the future.
Awesome.
They're uploading to a drive.
They'll be there.
And then I'll hand those off to a producer who will hand those off to a producer.
Who will put it on YouTube.
Who will then link us to a link, and then we'll make a blip on the website we run, waypoint.com.
Just go to waypoint.vice.com.
Waypoint.vice.com, waypoint.zone.
New.donk.city.
What else? Digitalpyramids.com. I revealed these last night on the stream.
There's a new one, that's right.
There's more than a new one. There are new ones.
Oh my.
They're very personal to
me. There's Creamy Roll.
Because my name, there is You know Crunchyroll? You've heard of Crunchyroll.com? You can go to CreamyRoll.com.
I don't want to go to CreamyRoll.com.
You can go to CreamyRoll.com.
No.
You could go to AustinWalkerGames.games/games.games. Or to vice.waypoint.austinwalkergames.games/com.
Good.
That'll take you to waypoint.vice.com. You could go to facebook.austinwalkergames.games, which will take you to my Facebook page. You could also go to austinwalkergames.games/livejournal, which will take you to my old Tumblr blog.
I'm really proud.
We have a very strange fan base, Patrick.
Strange and wonderful.
Loving. Truly loving. You can also go to austinwalkergames.games/myspace to go to my Facebook page. Also, shout-outs to Bowen for letting us use his song, Miss You, off of his EP, Pale Machine. You can find out more info about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Thank you, everybody. We will see you on Monday. I want your weekend to be good. I want your weekend to be productive or relaxing or both. You find that medium and you take it.
Guts and glory.
Peace.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.